Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Birdwilt.
And in this episode, we're talking about the first three episodes of The Book of Boba Fett, highly awaited new series on Disney+. There's a lot to talk about here. I figure we could start by giving a little bit of an overview of how we're feeling at this point, kind of checking in on the series after the first three episodes, and then we can talk about some of the specifics that that these episodes kind of triggered in our mind. For my part, I got to say I was excited for the show. Timur Morrison did something interesting with Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, and I was excited, particularly with this premise of him exploring this new role as a crime lord. But I got to say, three episodes in, it does not feel like it's delivering. It feels like it's moving too slow, and it feels uneven. And we'll talk a little bit about the specifics of the episodes as we get into this. But so far, I'm thinking that this needs to dramatically speed up in episode four, especially because, as we'll talk about, they don't have a lot of time left. So that's my overview. Grace, how are you feeling after three episodes of the show?
It's fine. That's pretty much my big takeaway. It's fine. I enjoy it a lot more than I enjoyed The Bad Batch. I do not enjoy it as much as I enjoy The Mandalorian. In terms of the Star Wars TV shows that have come out on Disney Plus, I would rank it solidly in the middle. I would agree with you that it needs to speed up. And also, I think part of the disappointment is that he's not really an ambiguous character, not exactly a kind of anti-hero. I mean, the market is oversaturated with anti-heroes, but this show was kind of billed as, all right, he's a crime lord now. He's like a bad guy, but we're rooting for him anyway. He just kind of seems like an unambiguously good guy, and that's fine, but I don't know. It's a little bit lacking in the moral ambiguity and even the violence that I was expecting from the ads for the show. What do you think, Haley?
I greatly respect how, like, some of the deeply weird undertones. For instance, the mayor's assistant, like, just has a very interesting vibe. And the, like, I don't know, the set, every episode, the set has seemed too clean to me, which is weird because they went out of their way to sort of like scuff it up and make it look lived in. But it's like, it still like sort of takes me out of it. Like, it looks like, oh, they built this to film this show, which of course they did. But the other thing is, it feels so empty. Like, it feels like there should be more people.
Yep.
I don't understand why there's only like three characters that he's interacting with when he's like the crime lord. I figured there would be, more holdovers from the previous Daimyo administration. Or at least he would bring in his own people, teaming up with bounty hunters from his past or some sort of thing. But it's like, it's just him and Ming-Na Wen, which is great. Except that, like, I think, Eric, you're the one who mentioned this. They're both pretty, like, walled off personalities.
That was actually me who mentioned
that.
That
was you. Grace, would you like to discuss that aspect?
And once again, I am stealing ideas from my boyfriend because he is the one who made that assessment, which I think is very accurate, where both Boba and Fennec Shand are kind of gruff loner characters, and they both have a kind of sarcastic sense of humor. And that makes them kind of work as a partnership, but it doesn't exactly make them the most charismatic leads for a TV show, where usually you just have one gruff loner who is typically got a kind of cast of characters around them. This is two gruff loners, and that's a bit much. And they're definitely points that are fun where they have this sort of dry sense of humor and they have moments of levity, I suppose, together. But it makes it difficult for the viewer to become invested in them and their relationship if both of them are that kind of walled off character, as you put it, Haley.
You know, I would, and this Hoth Takes listeners will know that this is my hobby horse, but I would love to see more romance in Star Wars. And, like, I do love the interplay of those two characters, and I feel like, if there were more alone time of them goofing off or sort of not as much political scheming, but just existing, it would be fun to watch. And I would love a romance! I know that's very stereotypical of me, but...
Do you want a rom-com between Boba Fett and Fennec Shand?
I would love
where they're, like,
honestly,
they're sitting
two
around
rough loners
and,
make
like,
their way into each other's hearts.
There was a little bit of it at the table... in episode 3 when they're eating, there is a little bit of that kind of like homey kind of vibe, but I would imagine, Haley, you're looking for something where it's like he's feeding her like Star Wars noodles and she like, spills them, and then
like the pear scene in Attack of the Clones
where he cuts a pear, like they're doing like shooting practice together, and like I don't know. I feel like it could be
fun. Oh, and the targets, like they're doing shooting practice, and the targets pop up, and the targets are like Boba Fett, and Fennec kind of looks over at him and like does the shrug, like, it's a living. Like,
I actually agree with that take. I think
it would be lovely. They're a beautiful couple. It would be so nice.
Yeah, they're both attractive older people. There's also not enough romance for like people above the age of 40 in media. So
I just want to see Boba Fett like bringing her flowers or something, or them looking at the stars together. Like, that's what I want out of this show. But
wow,
since
this,
you mentioned
this
it, Eric,
swerved. This
I will
really
say,
swerved. I gotta
I
say.
Will say, since you mentioned it, the platter, the table of food, potentially my favorite scene in the whole show thus far. It looked very good.
It looked really good. I will say, it looked really good. Can I just jump off of what you said about the story, the setting kind of feeling a little bit empty?
Yeah.
It's clear this is going to be a problem for Star Wars TV shows under Disney, probably for the foreseeable future, because they're obsessed with this, you know, virtual reality set thing that they've developed called The Volume, which basically allows them to, you know, film in a studio but look like they're out on set and have naturalistic light and all that stuff. But of course, they're probably leaning on that more heavily now than they might have otherwise because of the pandemic. But the problem is it feels small. It feels very small. And you saw this on Mandalorian too. They would visit these ginormous cities, but because it was all fake and they weren't actually there, they would only talk to like 6 people.
There's 10 residents of all of Tatooine.
It's annoying because you see the overhead shots and they're swarming with people. We know that Mos Espa is a populated city, at least for Tatooine, and yet they talk to like 3 people. And it's obvious that that's because they love shooting in The Volume. There's probably some COVID complications with bringing in a lot of, you know, guest star level people or having too many extras. I don't know the specifics, but it can't just be like, this isn't the kind of storytelling that we're used to. Granted, in Star Wars, we're used to either movies or animated series where they don't have to, it's not as many logistics for having large crowds. But at the same time, other live action shows seem to be pulling this off even during the pandemic. So they need to figure that out because it's become a pattern where you're watching the episode and you just know, oh, this was filmed on a virtual reality set and we're going to probably see them talk to 3 people in this episode, because that has become their pattern and it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I think Haley also made a really good point where it looks very clean, and even though it's set in Tatooine, which is grungy, and something that I think the show has done well is kind of lean into the aesthetic of the original trilogy, particularly with having it kind of campy aliens and robots in the background, droids, sorry, campy aliens and droids in the background, and the 80s hair. I liked the biker gang in the 3rd episode, not particularly because I liked the biker gang, but because that's the kind of silly thing that appears in classic Star Wars, and I appreciated that. But there is something a little bit off about all of it, where it doesn't quite feel lived in the way that Tatooine of the movies felt lived in. And I think that probably is due to what you were talking about, Eric, which I had not even heard of the volume. So that makes sense that it doesn't feel lived in because it's not real.
Well, and also, I mean, to be fair, they have managed to go out on location a few times. The most famous example was actually a Robert Rodriguez episode of The Mandalorian.
It's the one where both shows up,
and they're in this sort of hilly, grassy terrain, and you can actually tell that they're on location because they have more freedom to move around. They're not on this. I don't want to be too critical of the volume. If you go on YouTube and search for it, it's really cool. It looks really cool, and it's very impressive technically. It doesn't always make for the best storytelling. And I worry that they're becoming addicted to it. And I would like to see more of that Mandalorian episode where they're on location and they can actually play with the environment. I would love to see more of that.
What do we think of the plot so far? I mentioned mayor's assistant. Like, he's so deeply weird. Like, I think that might be my favorite part. Like, you have no idea what that guy is up to.
Haley, have you seen Veep?
Yes, I have seen parts of Veep. It was a little much for me, for my sensibilities.
So, yeah, that makes sense. That checks out.
That definitely checks out. The guy who plays the mayor's assistant plays Selina Meyer's ex-husband. The sort of enigmatic, like, politician guy who basically the Anthony Weiner stand-in, who has all these scandals and is kind of sleazy and creepy. And it was like, I could tell that I'd seen this guy before. And so I went to the cast listing and I was like, oh my God, he played him, because he does have a similar kind of shifty energy, which I thought was very funny. Briefly on the bikers.
Could I just do a slight tangent?
Yeah.
In there is that the guest stars are weirdly great and they're bringing excellent energy into it. Like the voice of their little robot dude is Matt Berry.
Yes.
For anyone who watches What We Do in the Shadows. Like, it's so, why is he there? I don't know, but I love it. Randomly having Danny Trejo be the Rancor keeper, we love to see it. Character actor Steven Root being the water seller, you know, just all these random actors showing up, having a good time, and I do appreciate that.
It's great. They've gotten really great guest stars, so I will give them credit for that. And seeing Danny Trejo, that was just really funny. I will say on the biker gang, that actually fits into what Haley was saying, where everything looks too clean. Because if you look at these clips of the biker gang, when they're just like, there's one shot especially where they pull up to the front of like the mayor's office, I guess, and they're all in formation. They are way too clean. I'm sorry. Those bikes are way too clean for anybody who's been on Tatooine for 5 minutes. So they look ridiculous. They look way too clean. They look like a lot of people on Twitter were saying, and I agree with this, it looks like something you'd see on Coruscant, you know, the flashy sort of glittery city. Even the underworld of Coruscant has a little bit more shine and sort of sparkle to it. Tatooine should not have bikes like this.
I have heard from two different people who watched this that it looked too much like Power Rangers, which...
It did.
There's one shot that sticks in my mind where it's the girl with like the cyborg arm driving. They did not do the best job like making that arm look real, and it bothered me so much. My other note on the biker gang is there was one genuinely funny line in it, but they had to go and ruin it by pointing out that it was funny, where he's like, "Keep an eye on it," and the guy with the cyborg eye is like, "Oh, oh, like, I'm not offended." It was a genuinely funny joke until they had to like spell it out for everyone.
Yeah, they gilded the lily on that one. I was prepared to like that moment, and then they just leaned into it a little too hard.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, I mean, we'll talk about each of the episodes, but slowest bike chase I've ever seen. I don't understand why those bikes move so slow. It was ridiculous. Okay, so Haley asked what we think of the plot. So I said on Twitter, and I caught a little bit of guff for this, that the whole Tusken flashback subplot, if that were what the show was about and that were the A story, I would think that this show was firing on all cylinders, because it's a well-done storyline, and it's great, it's impressive, it's fun, but it's the B plot. And it doesn't feel like the B plot because it feels like 70% of every episode is the flashbacks.
Yeah.
And we're not actually getting any story. I mean, at this point, really all we know is that someone, I guess, was it the Hutt twins, has hired, you know, somebody to kill Boba Fett. And but now they're leaving the planet. And it's like, we don't know as much as we should know three episodes into a series that is not that long. You know, I keep saying this about Mandalorian. I'm going to repeat it probably every time they do one of these limited series. You don't have time to be dragging your feet like this. You don't have time to be spending this much time on the Tusken subplot. I'm sorry, we get it. He had these experiences with these the native population. He helped them, you know, use technology. They helped him, you know, regain his sense of calm and composure and his sense of self. I get it. We get it. Move on.
It could have just been the first episode, like only the flashback. It like I think part of why they're only doing it as flashbacks is they don't have enough storyline to do it as the main, like, because what, in the last episode all of them died.
I
was gonna say, like, it would have been cool if the whole first season was set in the past relative to the events of the Mandalorian.
I thought that was so ridiculous
sort of coming out. Go ahead, Grace. Sorry,
I'm sorry I interrupted you because of my righteous outrage. In terms of, you're totally right about them spending too much time on the flashback. And it just felt so weirdly abrupt to me after spending all of that time on the flashback, such that the second episode was 52 minutes long and like half an hour of that was flashback. And then the next episode is just like, well, they all died. Isn't that a bummer? We didn't see the body of the super cool Tusken that taught him how to fight that I saw. So maybe they will show up in future episode flashbacks. But that just felt like really cheap to me and kind of cheapened the whole Tusken storyline, too, because it was like, oh, okay, I get it. You're not really trying to develop Tusken culture. You really are just using them as a plot device to explain this guy's development. And that's not cool because they made overtures as to developing that culture and then just turned into a plot device and not even in a very sort of respectful way either. It was just very abrupt. So why did you take us through like three episodes of flashback when you don't have the time, only to end it like that? I'm just mad about it, as you can tell.
Yeah, I also, you know, in thinking about how to answer Haley's question about how do we feel about the plot, I don't even really feel like I have a great grasp on like where this is going, like the actual A story, the true plot of the show, the plot of what we were told the show is going to be about. I feel like we know so little right now. It's frustrating, and it's also making me think, how are they going to land this, right? What end point are they going to reach?
My theory, and the tone, what they have done very well, and I mentioned it before, the tone is sort of unsettling. Like, every character is sort of shifty. There's not enough people, and, like, maybe there's a reason that there's not enough people. Like, you just feel sort of like, this is weird. And I think they're going to lead to this giant showdown where Boba kicks a bunch of people's butts. Like, that's how they're going to land it. I don't know if it's going to be the Pikes, if it's going to be, like, the mayor. Did the mayor go off to be with the Pikes? Like, it feels like it's going to end up being sort of the showdown, sort of reminiscent of that episode of The Mandalorian where Boba is just sort of in his full capabilities. And I have seen some people complain online about Boba not really using his set of weapons enough. Like, he never uses his jetpack or things that could sort of just put these small fights, like, end them quickly. He just hasn't really done. And to me, that I hadn't even noticed that, but it is sort of frustrating. Like, that first fight, I guess in the first episode, was somewhat ridiculous with, like, the electric sticks or something. It just looked a little bit silly. Like, the sort of thing that Boba should have been able to sort of nip in the bud pretty quickly.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. But yeah, I mean, he's got all these tools we've seen, you know, in Return of the Jedi, he uses the sort of that, I don't know what you'd call it, but like the cord that sort of wraps around Luke. Why didn't he use that to trip one of these guys up and break the circle of like the shields that they are holding up? Like, I don't know. I don't want to become that guy who's like, Boba Fett has so many cool weapons. Why isn't he winning every fight? Whenever he fights, he should win. I don't want to totally be like that guy. Right. Yeah, no, you're that guy. But he's Boba Fett. Like, the reason that people fell in love with him was because the armor looked cool and had all these hidden gizmos. So why are we not seeing more of the hidden gizmos?
Yeah, I would agree that that whole aspect of it is kind of disappointing. I thought that as well with his jetpack. And this kind of brings me to a complaint that I have seen on Twitter and that I mentioned before, which is that he's not as violent even as he was in The Mandalorian. And I know that sounds bad, like I want Boba Fett to be more violent. But, like, in the episode where he shows up in The Mandalorian, the cool Robert Rodriguez episode, he, like, kicks some serious butt. And he, like, definitely kills some modern stormtroopers. There's a body count there. And Boba Fett in the original trilogy, he's a bad guy. He's a bounty hunter. He is a badass bounty hunter. Who doesn't play by anyone's rules. And I feel like we kind of lost some of that in this show. And I would like to see him, you know, if he's a crime lord, I want to see him crimin'. And,
you know, maybe they're building, like I said, maybe they're building toward it. Like, they have him sort of in this unnatural trying to be the diplomat role, which is, it doesn't really fit with who he is. And you know, they tried to explain it with like being amongst the sand people, but like maybe they're building this tension intentionally. Like they want us to be frustrated, and eventually it's going to be very cathartic to see him like fight all of these people.
So your theory is that he's like making a mental list in his head of all the times that he spares right. people, and they're in the last episode, he's just going to kill everybody.
Yeah. And That'd and then it's dope. Like a new age, and like he just decides to rule by fear.
Okay, interesting. I will say that I did put in my notes that, like, I'm not one of those people who's like, he killed people, so he should kill people all the time now, which I know is not what you're saying, but some people have definitely been suggesting that that's how they feel about this. But even I think that it would be helpful for him to kill more people. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, but the mayor's assistant should not be able to talk to the new daimyo without losing his head. You know, like, or he shouldn't be able to talk to him like that without losing yeah. his head. It's not yeah. a good way to rule because word spreads that you're a pushover. And that creates more problems for you down the line. You might have to end up using more force than you might want to. And I, you know, it sort of sounds like I'm giving advice to gangsters here, but it seems counterproductive to take the soft touch approach every time.
You know what I would love to see is the mayor's assistant turn out to be the big bad guy. Like, he's actually maneuvering all of this behind the scenes.
He's the real Pike crime yeah. lord.
he's just probably my favorite character. He's great.
Go ahead,
Eric.
I was just going to say, one of the things I really like about that character is that he just doesn't seem afraid of Boba Fett, which is, like, I think Boba Fett should be trying to scare people more, including by killing people like that guy. But just watching him not be afraid of Boba Fett is just really funny to me.
Like, maybe he's not afraid because he is much more powerful than he seems. Maybe it's a Darth Jar Jar moment. Yeah.
Darth Mayer's assistant. Something that I am kind of enjoying about the show is how silly the aliens look. And I know I kind of mentioned this before, but the Pikes in live action,
oh
they
my
look
gosh.
Silly. And
they
I
look like Lego
in,
soldiers.
Yeah, I don't mean that in a bad way.
It's like, fun silly.
It's fun silly. But, you know, I'm used to seeing them in the animated shows where they have, they're weird looking, but they have this kind of menace about them. And it's just kind of hard to take them seriously.
They're like, I wear plastic face masks now.
I think it's because it's been a while since I've seen them in animation, but didn't they emote more? even like through the masks in animation than they seem to be able to do. Like, I just have memories of them sort of grimacing and frowning and sneering in animation, and I don't think we've seen that in live action. Maybe I'm wrong.
You might be right. It took me a minute, honestly, to even recognize what they were. I was like, wait, those faces are shaped like those guys from the Clone Wars.
They sure are. Something that I wanted to bring up that I do appreciate about the show, particularly episode 2, and then this was kind of undermined by episode 3, but how it did appear to be giving the Tusken Raiders more sympathy and appreciating them as their own culture. Something that I thought was pretty cool was the incorporation of Maori culture into the Tusken weapon sticks and the dance that they do at the end of episode 2, both of which were based on Maori culture, and I thought that was pretty neat. And then they kind of totally undermined that with episode 3, but you know, maybe in future episodes they will prove me wrong and prove that they actually are taking the Tusken Raiders seriously.
I'd love for the Tusken Raiders to have the right to self-determination and for Boba to be, I think I saw this on Reddit, so I'm not sure who to credit beyond Reddit itself, but someone was saying, you know, you sort of fail to see the motivation for why Boba is even doing this. Like, what does he gain? Does he really even enjoy this? That sort of thing. And someone was like, yeah, maybe it's like he sees this as a way to, I don't know, bring sort of justice or like better like governance for the Tusken Raiders after that experience. But I feel like they could... You would think if he were so close with them, like I was saying earlier, it's so empty. Like he could bring some of them on board his staff or something.
Oh, wow. That you want to talk about controversial. I think that would be like really incendiary.
It would be awesome. He should do it.
You know, it's interesting to talk to think about his motivation, because I agree. It's completely unclear why he wants to do this. At the end of episode 3, when we learn that the Pikes are sort of running the show now, you know, we get this sort of sense that maybe there's going to be a showdown there and he will have some ability to avenge the Tuskens who were killed by, it seems pretty clear that if they weren't killed directly by the Pikes, that gang who he saw, you know, their symbol painted on the wall that he sort of connected to that earlier experience, that gang could very well be working for the Pikes in that capacity. You know, I don't necessarily know that is a clear, you know, vengeance storyline, because he didn't know when he became the daimyo, he didn't know that the Pikes would end up running the show and butting heads with him. Like, that was a new development after he showed up. So it's not like he heard that they were in charge and he decided to take them on to avenge the Tuskens.
Yeah, his motivation really just is lacking in a lot of areas. And part of it makes you think, like, maybe he just didn't have anything better to do. You know, he helps out the Mandalorian with his little side quest and then is like, well, I guess I'll just go back to Tatooine and become the crime lord there because I don't really have anything better to do or anything else I know about.
He should have just married Fennec and had children and like had a little farm, Rancor farm.
Rancor farm. I do like how Boba was a total horse girl with the Rancor.
It was wholesome.
Like, it was pure how he was like, did the typical, you know, horse girl meets the horse and says, you know, no one understands me but you. And that was pretty much the moment that they had together where the Rancor and Boba just had a moment of pure horse girl connection, and I thought that was beautiful.
I used to be a horse girl. I won horse ribbons.
Yeah, that does not surprise me even one tiny
nanometer. In sixth grade, it was not a long-lived hobby, but I was good at it, and they were good horses.
We have now learned two facts about Haley that totally check out, and that is that she didn't really like Veep, and she was a horse girl. And both of these things do not surprise me in the slightest.
To be fair, yeah. It was very brief. It was not a long-lived all throughout high school sort of thing. It was expensive as a hobby, so I didn't keep doing it.
Also, those horses can be pretty profane. I mean, they swear like sailors, so you know, for someone of your sensibilities, it's not necessarily the greatest crowd to be hanging around with.
True.
I will say that if the Rancor thing becomes like a thing and somehow plays into the story, I will retroactively enjoy it, but it just seemed like a waste of time, man, especially when, as I've said, I'm going to beat this drum again. You don't have a lot of time. You're choosing to make very short episodes for whatever reason, and you're choosing to make a very short season for whatever reason. So, you know, great. I mean, you have unlimited money, but you chose to only spend a very small amount of it. Oh, that's your call, but you don't get to act like you are firing on all cylinders when you spend 10 minutes on, you know, Boba Fett being a horse girl. I don't get that use of time. I'm sorry.
What this if might in be the last cynical. Episode? Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Chris. We should rock, paper, scissors.
on an audio podcast.
On an audio podcast. You go first.
I was just going to say, how funny would it be if the last episode is like the dude's rug and it really ties everything together? And, you know, it makes total sense retroactively. Everything is amazing. And we're like, wow, we really called that wrong. And then the internet gets to make fun of us for a million years. I think that would be the funniest outcome.
The internet's already making fun of me for a lot of different things. So I'm not too worried about that. Listen, I'll be happy. Like, I don't enjoy not enjoying things, you know? I'm a Star Wars fan. I want this all to fit together in a neat little puzzle and enrich other parts of the story and be valuable on its own. And if this can be that in the end, great. But boy, would that be, you know, a feat of Olympic level performance to make that work based on the fact that we are already three episodes in.
Here's where I would rage quit. And by rage quit, I mean be grumpy for a few minutes and then continue
to watch the show.
Star Wars podcast. If they are using this biker gang as advertising for a future biker gang show, I'm gonna be so mad. That would just be so egregious.
Yeah, that's gonna replace the what was it? The one that Gina Carano was going to be in?
Oh, Rangers of the New Republic?
Yeah, it's going to be the bikers.
They're going to be recruited as Rangers. Power Rangers of the New Republic. But it's all these like jokes about the guy with one eye, where it's like she's like they're making camp in the desert, and she's like, we got to be careful, sleep with one eye open, and then she turns directly to the camera and just winks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
and
would
every
bother
time.
Me.
Every time they make an eye joke, he will say, no, it's cool.
He'll explicitly like call out the joke as like, funny piece of eye-related humor there, fellow biker. I'm okay with this. By the way, what does it say that we're having more fun joking about the Power Rangers biker show than we are talking about what we've actually seen from this like supposedly, you know, impressive Boba Fett show?
Well, I think as we are talking about this, it's making me realize how I really do not have high hopes for the future live action Star Wars TV shows. I just, of the Star Wars TV shows that have come out on Disney Plus in the past couple of years, excluding season 7 of The Clone Wars, which is a masterpiece, The Mandalorian is really the only one that I think is good, and it just does not bode well for the future TV shows, and I was already disinclined to like them disinclined to like the Ahsoka show because of it being live action. The Obi-Wan show I am withholding judgment on. So I don't know. It just, seeing how they're using this format does not give me a ton of hope.
I agree.
My cynical theory that I was going to share earlier, which may be too unkind, is, like you said, Eric, they're making these episodes really short. And like I was saying earlier, I would love to see some of these more like interpersonal relationships develop more, sort of downtime. There's not that much downtime. And like part of me thinks that's just like a cowardice, like them overreacting to all of the random criticism to every other Star Wars property. And that was sort of the theory of the sequel movies, right? Like each one was an overreaction to the critics of the prior one. I feel like they're like, okay, if we keep it 30 minutes and we cut out anything that could bother people, like maybe we can steer clear of some of this, I don't know, fandom hate. For like, I'm sure people would be annoyed if the Book of Boba Fett turned out to be partly a romance show, like I would love to see. And they might just be like afraid of that. And if you keep the episode short, there's not room for that kind of thing.
But the thing is, they already, like, I see what you're saying, that if you keep the episode short enough, you don't have time to do those types of things. But they're keeping the episode short and still finding time to do things that they shouldn't be using time for. So it's not out of the question that they end up doing something that we might think they don't have time for, because they're already kind of doing that with the B-plot. I don't know. I think that there is something to the idea that they have found a formula, and it's must be working for them, right? I mean, people have enjoyed The Mandalorian. Boba Fett is not doing great critically, but it's Boba Fett. People are going to watch it, and they must feel comfortable in the decisions that they're making, especially with these shows where, again, it's not really the same concept as a movie in terms of, like, you know, it's not one and done, but it's done in a short enough time span where it's not like they're sitting there reading the tweets about episode one while they're writing episode eight. You know, it's like they don't have that feedback loop available to them. And I don't know that I would want them to look at it anyway. So it is an interesting question to what degree they're trying to anticipate how people will feel about this stuff when they make it. I hope that they're not thinking about it too much, because there's no one consensus in fandom about what this show should look like.
You know, I bet that pressure is tremendous with this show specifically. I mean,
oh, I bet
more so than any other show. But I will give them credit, though. Like I said, there is a deeply weird like undertone with some of these characters. Like it's unique. Some of them.
Since this is kind of unrelated, but since you bring up that weird energy, I was pretty happy with the weird energy of the Hutts that they brought. I love Hutts, and. You know, it just, that made me kind of sad seeing these Hutts, the twins, that Zero the Hutt was killed off before this show could air.
Gone too soon, Grace. Gone too soon.
The best character in Star Wars.
Rest in power, King. 'Cause, you know, I love Zero the Hutt.
Can you just imagine, like, all right, so in a second, I will give them credit for bringing a character from non-live action into live action, which I think was really cool. But can you just imagine Zero the Hutt in this purple monstrosity just, like, playing an important role in Book of Boba Fett?
Yeah, with the accent. The accent is key.
The accent, which I desperately want to try right now, but I know I won't be able to pull it off.
Because it's nasally, but like deeply bayou, like Daniel Craig in Knives Out. Like,
it's awesome.
Incredible.
All right, so let me give credit where credit is due. One of the things that I think that they should be using shows like this for is little Easter eggs for the fans. Things that don't take you out of the story if you don't know what's going on, but give you a little kind of, you know, like, oh, wow, oh my God, you know, if you do know what's going on. And they brought in this Wookiee bounty hunter whose name is Black Chrysanthemum, and they actually say his name in episode 3, but he shows up in episode 2, and he's just kind of this menacing guy, and the idea is that Boba Fett should be very afraid of the Hutts. He is from a comic called Dr. Aphra, which is notable in its own right for being, I think, the first Star Wars comic to be where the main character is a woman of color. But a very good comic, a very fun comic, and he shows up in that comic and is sort of an on-again, off-again ally enemy of hers. And the internet my section of the internet anyway, exploded when he showed up, because it was completely out of nowhere, but it also made sense when you think about it, that he would be the kind of person who would be in the employ of these huts. So I like that. I hope we see more of that. I think it's really fun. That's all.
I would say, as well, having that little mention when Danny Trejo mentioned the Witches of Dathomir.
Yes,
writing,
yes, that's another
like,
one.
Oh man, the Witches of Dathomir, those are my girls. I love those crazy gals.
Rest in power, queens.
Rest in power, queens.
Yeah, I also, there were a couple other things in episode three. I forget who says it, but somebody mentions that Tatooine used to have oceans, which is like a deep Star Wars lore thing that I thought was really cool. And then the group, the like little sort of outlaw group who kills all the Tuskens, are called the Kintan Striders, which is a reference to one of the holo chess pieces from the Millennium Falcon chess from Djarik. It's one of the chess pieces in that game, which I thought was cool.
That is cool.
I've always pronounced that in my head as Djarik. Is it Djarik?
I don't know that anybody says it in Star Wars, so I think we can file that under say it however you want. Also, even in Star Wars, people say Han and Han, so
that's
you know
true.
What?
Twi'lek and Twi'lek.
Oh, by the way, okay, so I gave credit. Let me now add some criticism, as if I haven't done enough of that. We were talking about how there are so few people in Mos Espa, and it's really weird. There's a great shot in the third episode where they go over to the spaceport to show the Pike leadership, I guess, showing up on Tatooine. And just that brief move out of the crater of the city and over to the spaceport, and you see all these crowds, just that little moment actually made me excited. And I realized it was because it was the first time we'd gone beyond the confines of either the city or the palace or the dunes into an area where there would actually be crowds. And it made me realize how claustrophobic the show feels. And I don't know if they're going to have opportunities to get out of that claustrophobia again, but I hope they do, because man, that was, I didn't realize how much I wanted to see teeming masses until I saw them.
This is another little random tidbit in an episode of just us mentioning random tidbits. But a random tidbit from that scene is that the eye biker guy is watching the arrival of the Pikes from his motorcycle in his rearview mirror. And I recently rewatched all of the Matrix movies in anticipation for the new Matrix movie, which I also watched. And in the first Matrix movie, there's a very similar scene where the character Trinity watches bad guys arrive from her motorcycle mirror. And it was very similar. And I wondered, is this an homage to that scene? Or is it just a similar enough trope that, you know, that that can be something else that happens? So if it was a kind of homage to the Matrix, that's kind of cool. If not, then I'm just seeing Matrix things everywhere because I watched it all recently.
As long as we're throwing out random tidbits, I will say I appreciated the fact that we finally got some explanation of what happened to Mos Espa after Jabba's death, but why was that not in episode one? Why was that in episode three? That seems like classic setup material for the first episode to help people understand what's going on. I mean, I have a friend who is not a Star Wars fan. She's seen, you know, actually just watched Empire Strikes Back with her, but she's seen, you know, A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, and she was very confused by how much she was expected to know about the setting in Mos Espa. She knows who Jabba is. She's heard of him. She knows he's dead by this point, but she was thinking, oh, there must be more backstory as to the situation in the city that Boba Fett is walking into. And I had to basically explain, no, you know as little as the rest of us. And again, that's fine going into episode one, but you should not come out of episode one being just as confused. It's just, it's one more question that you're asking yourself in the back of your mind that's distracting you from the questions you should be asking, which are about where the story is going to go.
This... another random tidbit. I'm sure you have
we
seen...
We all get one.
I'm sure you all have seen the Patton Oswalt Parks and Rec.
Oh, all right. Yes.
Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Apparently, he came up with that on the spot. Like, that was not pre-written. And, like, they just took it and ran with it in the actual show. Like, it all right, scene so, for scene.
But, all right, so everybody's saying that. But I'm sorry to be the party pooper here. There aren't really a lot of other ways right. that they could have done the show. Like, it's not like he was some great oracle of a Boba Fett TV show. Like, if you're going to do a Boba Fett TV show, of course it's going to start with him getting out of the Sarlacc.
I think where it matches, like, what put it over the top is... like panning down from the twin suns, like he says.
Oh,
like,
come on. Of course you're gonna pan down from the twin suns.
No.
Yes.
No. I disagree. I think it was an homage to that.
I mean, if it is, that's funny and I love it. But if it's not, I think that's like, I think Occam's Razor is, it's not an homage to the random comedy bit on Parks and Recreation. It's just a classic. It's a classic Star Wars pan down from the suns.
Mm. It could have been at night. They could have done it at night.
Yeah, but then it would have been hard to see everything.
Mm.
And then we wouldn't have known it was Tatooine.
Right, because you're not going to have two moons. Although, actually, I don't know. Maybe Tatooine does have two moons.
How many moons do they have?
That's a great trivia question. All right, well, let's transition out of this discussion by talking about what do we want to see from the rest of the season. And this is really just an excuse for me to say, I want to see Crimson Dawn. I want them to be the power behind the Pike Syndicate. I want that to be the central conflict of this crossover that they're supposed to be doing with all the different series. They just did a comic crossover where Crimson Dawn sort of re-announces itself on the stage and Kira kind of shows up and they make a big splash. I would love to see a live action version of that where the threat from that criminal gang is so significant that it somehow brings in Ahsoka and, you know, Mando, and they all sort of have to deal with it. You know, bring back Emilia Clarke while she is still the right age to play that character. She seems to want to do it. She seems to have had fun with it. She was great in the role.
Wouldn't she be old by now?
She would be older. She would be like
20 years older.
She
would be like Harrison Ford's age.
No, this show is set 5 years after A New Hope. Or six, was it 6 years?
What?
6 years? Wait, let me check.
But
hold
on. When does Solo take place?
You're right. I'm so confused.
It's not that far, is it?
I was confused. Ignore me.
Oh, you know what? Hold on.
I'm a fake fan.
I don't know, because now I'm having second thoughts, because some of the other timeline stuff. Oh, you know what? Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
I fact-checked myself in real time. It's like 19 years later.
Yeah.
Well, all right. You could, fine. Put makeup on her. She can be an older, wizened crime lord. She's still, everything I said still applies. It's just that you have to age her up. She's still interested, I'm sure. She's still a great character. Crimson Dawn is still very cool. I would like to see it. All right.
I take back my take. I still think you were right, Eric, because Luke wasn't old in The Mandalorian.
She showed up in Solo.
Yeah, but like it felt like the end of Solo was right before the beginning of A New Hope.
I looked it up. It's actually 10 years before.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because Harrison Ford was like 35.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, still, I'm not taking back my suggestion that this should happen. I'm just acknowledging that they would have to age her up. Okay, nobody email me. I understand that she'd have to be older. I still think it's cool. Anyway, what do you two want to see from the rest of the season, from the next 4 episodes? We are almost halfway through the season, and we know nothing. What do you want to see?
I'd like to know things.
That's the episode title right there. I'm calling it right now.
I will reiterate, I would like to divert the entire focus of the show and have Ming-Na Wen and Boba Fett fall in love, madly in love, and maybe they just give up on this whole daimyo thing.
Oh, and you know what they could do? They could ride. They could have like "just married" sign taped to the Rancor's butt, and they can ride off into the sunset on the Rancor.
Perfect. Into the twin sunset.
Right? Because it's two suns, Grace. Yeah. Great point.
more seriously, like I said, I want the mayor's assistant to be the big bad guy, secretly coordinating all of this, and I would love the episode in The Mandalorian for Boba to sort of have more of those intense fight scenes, maybe a final showdown of some sort.
I would definitely agree with the fight scenes element of that. I want more of that Boba. And then the only other thing I would say would be to kind of bring back the Tuskens in a way that made sure that they weren't just a plot device for this dude's development. I'm not optimistic on that one, but I could be proved wrong. Because I think that would be a real waste to develop this culture that has been so unfairly maligned for decades in the Star Wars media. And that was very crudely based upon Native Americans, and then sort of do develop it more and then kind of throw that away just felt really icky to me. And I hope that they take some of that back.
The only other thing I will say is either turn Boba Fett into a real force to be reckoned with, as we've said, or make him abandon the claim to Jabba's throne and just choose a new path in life and have that be kind of a surprise twist of this season. And maybe they'll do a second season about what that new path is, but figure out something that is consistent with this character. Either one of those would be fine. I actually think the latter would be a little bit more interesting, but either way, commit to some choice for him, because right now I don't know what he is thinking.
Agreed.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at hothtakes. I'm at Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is at Grace_Seegers, and Haley is at Birdnator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art. I edited this episode and put together our music. And as always, for legal purposes, you should know that all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms. That includes iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. All right, we'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.